Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
The Money Show brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that's unearthing limitless potential at Mining Indaba 2020. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP. I thought that when you handed a business into business rescue, you lost control. You went, you know what? I hand over control to you. Whatever has to be done to rescue this business, you do it. Public Enterprises tonight saying government will be making representations to the practitioners in order to balance the necessity for trimming unprofitable routes with the need to ensure future sustainability of both the airline and South Africa's aviation industry. South Africa's aviation industry is fine. It's just SAA that's knackered because it was mismanaged. This will necessitate a review of the BRP recent announcement. But you could. What is the legal position? What is the legal position once you have handed over responsibility to a business rescue practitioner? Hold on a second. You don't have the right to do that anymore, do you? We need an expert. We need an expert in business rescue practitioning. That's what we need. Also this evening, we've got my prize to give away. If you are the person who gets this one right, coming up, the chance to win 5,000 Rand in iStore vouchers with a fast fact question brought to you by iStore. You get the MacBook Air for your business for 829 Rand per month or MacBook Pro for just 999 Rand per month and discover why MacBook is the best book for business. Your question this evening, I can't believe it's Friday, so we're being kind. Who wrote Born a Crime? 31702 31567. Don't phone. Save your breath. Save your time. Save your airtime. And we will save you money. 31702 31567. Who wrote Born a Crime? Because it's so easy, answer number 37. And if you are answer number 37, you get it right on air. We will give you 4,000 Rand in iStore vouchers. You get the bonus question right. We give you 1,000 Rand. Don't phone, people. Don't phone. Who wrote Born a Crime? That is your question this evening. Justine Hoppe is director at the Business Rescue Division at Mazars Recovery and Restructuring. Public Enterprises Department issuing a statement, Justine, this evening saying it'll be making representations to business rescue practitioners that will necessitate a review of the BRP recent announcement. Have they got a right to interfere in the business rescue process, Justine? What's the position, please?
Good evening, Bruce. Thanks for having me on, and good evening to your listeners. It's interesting to see what's come out in the breaking news of today. We've seen that there's been concerns raised by government generically as to the cancellation of routes on the SAA business rescue process. There's nothing that stops an interested party from making representations to the business rescue practitioner. However, until such time as there's a published business rescue plan for consideration by all interested parties, primarily creditors of the company, I don't know that they're going to be able to do much more than ask for the business rescue practitioner to give them an audience to present their views. And more than that, I don't think they're going to be able to do.
But there's a statement. This will necessitate a review of the business rescue practitioner's recent announcement. This is the Public Enterprises Department trying to give an instruction to an independent process. They appointed the independent process. They said, you must carry out this independent process. Now we don't like the outcome. Now we're going to dictate. This is precisely why SAA went belly up in the first place.
Exactly, Bruce. I mean, I think that really does get to the heart of it. So I think one of the biggest stumbling points in the business rescue process, generically speaking, is that the very people who often advocate for the process at the outset don't quite like that come the process itself, they don't really have the casting votes, so to speak. And at the end of the day, the business rescue practitioner is independent. He acts in his capacity as the CEO or the managing director of the company. The board remains an extent, except to the extent that it has to act on the instruction of the business rescue practitioner. And the practitioner is ultimately appointed to act in the best interests of the company and all of the stakeholders. So while we often see in big business rescues, sort of big creditors trying to muscle their way in and have a bigger say, ultimately, the final decision rests with the business rescue practitioner. I think things, economic considerations, such as who is ultimately funding your process and whether or not that is going to stymie the process overall, do come into play.
Okay.
But there isn't really anyone who's going to dictate how that process unfolds.
Justine, thank you for clarifying. Director of the Business Rescue Division of Mazars Recovery and Restructuring, Justine Hoppe, this evening. What makes me uncomfortable is this will necessitate a review. No, it does not necessitate a review. Yes, you can be listened to. Yes, you can interfere. It's normal to have this interference, loss of vested interests. But the last word goes to the business rescue practitioner. That is the law. Now, there's a clash of the titans happening in Cape Town tonight. Charity tennis match. Rafael Nadal, Roger Federer teaming up respectively with Trevor Noah and Bill Gates. And it's all for charity. It's a great initiative at the Cape Town Stadium. The Gates Foundation has got a brand new chief executive. And he is a South African. Mark Suzman, the nephew of the great anti-apartheid politician and MP, the great liberal politician Helen Suzman, who spent much of her time as the only liberal opponent of the Nats in Parliament. And so we spoke to Mark Suzman about Bill Gates, and I said to him, I've seen Bill Gates's TV show Inside Bill's Brain, and inside that show he has a mean forehand. Is he any good at tennis, I asked?
Yeah, well, Bill is a pretty good forehand and backhand, and he's certainly a very competitive guy. And he has actually played with Roger Federer before, and they like to boast that they are unbeaten. And Bill is Roger's only doubles partner who has never been beaten with him. So I think Rafa and Trevor are going to have a tough challenge ahead of them tonight.
I mean, we make light of it, of course, but it's all being done in an enormous cause. I mean, for the Roger Federer Foundation, and it does a lot of good, as the Gates Foundation does. Explain to me the importance of this confrontation, in inverted commas, this evening, and the importance it does for the sorts of work that you guys do.
Yeah, well, I think it's important in sort of two big ways. I mean, the first is actually when you have global stars of this magnitude coming and shining a spotlight on needs in Southern Africa, because the Roger Federer Foundation works across Southern Africa, mostly in primary and pre-primary education. That's enormously important. It's going to bring a lot of global attention, and it's global attention that's much needed, because the foundation actually does excellent work. And Roger himself was just in Namibia before coming down to South Africa and seeing some of the work his foundation does there. And the link to the Gates Foundation is similarly. You know, our focus is really on the world's poorest and neediest. We believe that every person, wherever they live, deserves the chance to a healthy and productive life. And again, sub-Saharan Africa, along with South Asia, are the two parts of the world which have the greatest needs and the greatest opportunities. And so being able to focus on that, to both raise funds, which will go directly to helping people, but as it's not more important, really shining attention on the issues and doing it in a positive way, saying change is possible and happening, and this is going to help enable that.
Not everybody is comfortable with the interventions of the Gates Foundation. There is some criticism, I think it's fairly marginal, but there's some criticism that the Gates Foundation, being as powerful as it is, with all the money that it has at its disposal, is able to do what countries should be doing. It almost becomes a quasi-autonomous state wherever it goes and intervenes in critical life-saving issues, but there is some criticism of that process. Well, how do you respond to that?
Two responses. So the first is, you know, we deliberately and carefully focus on issues that disproportionately affect the world's poorest people and where there are what we like to call market failures. We wish there was a clamor in the world of pharmaceutical companies and governments lining up to fund a new malaria vaccine or new malaria treatments. There should be. It's frankly a shame that there aren't doing that, given the massive burden that diseases like malaria, or here in South Africa, tuberculosis and HIV, put on those poor people. But in their absence, a foundation like ours can step in and, we believe, be catalytic. We never can or should substitute for either government or the private sector. Government has to be the fundamental long-term supplier of things like public health and education. The private sector is always going to be the most efficient producer of, say, goods like new vaccines or pharmaceuticals. But what we can do is help catalyze funding, attention in these gaps, which are sadly neglected, even if they shouldn't be.
As a foundation, you made some money available recently for when coronavirus arrives in Africa. We don't know when it's going to arrive and how it's going to arrive and what the impact is going to be. You made money available, a fairly limited amount of money in the global scheme of things right now. But how do you select the event or the cause or the project that you are going to do? Because the world is so desperate and there is so much poverty and there is so much need. And ultimately, there's only a finite amount of money to throw at the problems.
Yeah, well, first, on the coronavirus specifically, we've committed up to $100 million, and a good chunk of those resources are being devoted exclusively and explicitly to Africa, working with the African Centers for Disease Control, working with the World Health Organization's Africa teams to help prepare Africa and African countries for the very likely onset of the coronavirus. We hope that to date there are no confirmed cases, but no confirmed cases does not mean there are no cases. Yep. It just means they have not been identified and proven, and we've seen how transmissible the disease is. So for something like that, you know, it's a rare occasion, but we did it with the Ebola virus 5 years ago. When there are global health emergencies, one of our advantages is we can often move much more flexibly than governments or others, and we can disperse money quickly, and we can do it into areas like the African Centers for Disease Control, which, you know, are historically underfunded. And so that's why we moved as quickly as we did. In terms of our wider funding and selecting what we do and why we do it, again, it's always through that lens of two main priorities. One, is it going to help the poorest and neediest, whether it's in the United States where we work on education issues, whether it's around the world we work on issues like global health or financial inclusion? We need to be able to see a direct path to impact. And the second is the point I already raised earlier. Is our money critical to actually get this done? Because if it's something that we believe government could or should be doing, or the private sector could or should be doing, we should not be stepping in to play that substitution role. We should really always only be the catalytic bridge to that longer-term funding.
Mark Susman, thank you very much indeed. Mark Susman is the chief executive of the Gates Foundation, a nephew of the late Helen Susman, and a remarkable individual who's got a huge job and a massive budget to apply. But yes, this idea that they get involved and they intervene and they interfere, thank goodness that the world's billionaires, 200 of them, are part of the Giving Pledge, which was started when Warren Buffett phoned up Bill Gates and said, I want to be part of this. Why don't we get other people to do it as well? And the Motsepes have also committed to the Giving Pledge as well. Mark Susman, thank you very much indeed. He is the chief executive of the Gates Foundation.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Tata Mashiko is with Sanlam Private Wealth and the U.S. jobs numbers. I mean, they surprise and surprise and surprise and then surprise again. 225,000 jobs created in the U.S. last month. I mean, this is an astonishing economy that's doing astonishing things, Tato.
Evening, Bruce. And yeah, you are correct. The U.S. economy is on the longest expansion since the end of World War II, at least as far as the equity markets are concerned. And yeah, the numbers today were quite solid. 225,000, as you said, up from around 150,000 last month. Wage growth above 3%. So the year starting off well for the U.S. and obviously with the election cycle towards the end of the year. I'm pretty sure that the chief of the U.S. will like to keep it that way.
Yeah, I mean, no sitting U.S. president, I think, has ever lost an election in an environment where jobs have been created. I mean, it's just Donald Trump is in prime position. He's playing hardball with the Chinese, appears to be paying off. The Chinese now on the back foot because of coronavirus. They're going to be more willing to compromise. It's just, yeah, everything is going Donald Trump's way. SAA, the business rescue process, government now seeking to intervene in that process, sends a worrying signal for those seeking policy certainty and the rule of law, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Obviously, as you saw with Chancellor Merkel stating that policy certainty is one of the requirements for FDI into the country.
We do have policy certainty. We make rules, then we change them. That's certain.
Well, I suppose if you know that something is going to happen and the opposite will happen, then I suppose, yeah, you're right. You do have a certainty of uncertainty. But it's
maddening. But we have this business rescue process. The government appoints a business rescue practitioner, doesn't like the outcome, so therefore seeks to intervene and interfere. It's entirely entitled to have its input, but to say that this will necessitate a review of a process is a step too far.
Yeah, indeed. And that's not what investors want to see. It's not what the business community wants to see at all. Hopefully, this is more of them saying we would like to provide our input. But whether or not they take it further than that would be quite concerning. But let's hope that the practitioners are allowed to conclude their work.
Italtile, great South African business. How's it doing in a really, really depressed consumer environment?
Well, Italtal, one of the few businesses that seems to be managing the environment fairly well. You had like-for-like sales up 1.5%, both the retail and manufacturing side of the business showing positive sales growth. Earnings were up around 6 to 8%. Obviously, they concluded a BEE deal last year, so that had an impact on earnings. But excluding that, they did fairly well. So a lot of talk around SA Inc. struggling because of the macroeconomic environment, but there are one or two few gems which seem to be doing the best in a bad environment.
Okay, which is nice to hear. Final view on Mediclinic. Mediclinic was doing so well in South Africa, and like many companies, then decided to spread its wings and go offshore, and then made some terrible acquisitions, did some terrible deals, and really came quite badly unstuck. Mm. Is it turning a corner?
Yeah, well, the South African hospital groups in general haven't covered themselves in glory when they've gone offshore, to say the least. But Mediclinic seems to be focusing more on the local environment as well as Netcare as well. So no longer looking to spend large money on foreign acquisitions. And today they announced that they've concluded the acquisition of the Matlosana group of hospitals, around 300 beds located in Northwest. It took a very long time to get approval, 5 years in fact. So again, showing the authorities not really looking for further consolidation in the hospital space. But it is a tough environment for the hospital groups, but hopefully they'll be able to move forward from their previous mishaps.
Yeah, Tata Mashiko from Sanlam Private Wealth. Thank you very much for your insights this evening. As the JSE pulled back, the Rand lost value. I'm pretty convinced the Rand lost value as government started making noises about intervening in a process which they started themselves, which is a process to try and save SAA, put a professional in to save the airline. And then you say, no. I know we messed this up in the first place, but we know better than you. So that's why we appointed you, because we get to just try and undo what you're doing. It's insane. Fast back question. I asked you on 31702 and 31567, and record numbers of you came through this evening. Thank you very much. I asked you, who wrote Born a Crime? Simone, if you get this wrong, you're going to have to eat glass.
Oh, okay.
The answer.
Hello?
The answer is?
It's Trevor Noah.
I didn't want you to have to eat glass. And what is Trevor Noah's favorite sport?
Trevor Noah's favorite sport?
Yeah.
Cricket?
Well, he's not playing cricket this evening, is he? No, he's not. He's playing tennis this evening, Simone. But you still get 4,000 Rand in iStore vouchers, okay. Which is lovely. But now, for an additional 1,000 Rand in iStore vouchers, I need to know from you, true or false? And everybody this week has got this right, so you've got huge pressure on you. True or false, business owners can only apply online and not in store. Is that true or is that false?
It's false.
Of course it's false. The Apple iStore people are very very, very accommodating. They're very happy for you to apply online. They're also very happy for you to go in store and apply there, because mostly with load shedding, online doesn't work a lot of the time. So now you go into the store and you get lots of attention, which is lovely. Well done to you, Simone. You get 5,000 rands worth of iStore vouchers for getting the Trevor Noah question right, and an extra 1,000 rand for confirming that business owners most certainly can apply online and also in store. Well done to you, Simone. Congratulations. And 5,000 rand in iStore vouchers making their way to you. Yeah, 2016, Born a Crime, received favorably by major US book reviewers, became a number one New York Times bestseller. South Africans have gone mad for it. Trevor Noah is a mensch. He's playing against Bill Gates and Roger Federer today with Rafael Nadal in a charity doubles tennis match in Cape Town. What is the secret to making it big in business? Is it acquiring the tools of titans so that you can learn how to win friends and influence people? Perhaps it's about being smarter, faster, or even better. Well, at iStore, they believe that if you're going to take a page out of any book, it must be from a MacBook. That's their elevator pitch. Get a 13-inch MacBook Air from just 829 Rand per month, or a 13-inch MacBook Pro Touch Bar from just 999 Rand per month, including a 3-year extended warranty. Free training and unlimited in-store tech support. Visit myistore.co.za and discover why the best book for business is a MacBook. T's and C's apply.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that's unearthing limitless potential at Mining Indaba 2020. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
Busy week on The Money Show. Busy week in business. Busy week at the mining in Darba as well. On your next Money Show, Michael Yordan, the entrepreneur, the ex-banker, the guy who's been investing in lots of South African businesses, reviewing a book called That Will Never Work. It's all about the birth of Netflix and the amazing life of an idea by Mark Randolph. It's just up Michael Yordan's alley. Also, EFT expert Nareen Afisa on her personal relationship with money on our Make Money Mondays feature. That's a cracker show lined up for you. This next Money Show.
Bruce Whitfield on 702.
Well, Edcom this week announcing it's selling CNA to an investment company called Astoria Investments. Astoria Investments itself was taken over by local asset managers last year. This is the Edcom chief executive, Grant Patterson, on why he sold a company that he really, really liked.
Personally, I really love the business and I know the category well. But I think we've always said that, you know, I want to refocus Edcon on fashion, beauty and home products. And the reality is CNA just doesn't fit into that core strategy. We've always loved it. We've always tried to look after the business. And certainly we've been turning it around. But I think we found a good home for it, someone who's got a better balance sheet, a bit more capital to invest in the business. And I really do think there'll be better owners than Edcon is.
So better out than in this particular case. Better for Edgar's strategy and certainly better for CNA, which might not get the attention it needs internally.
Yes, correct. I actually think that Edcon became a drag on CNA. You know, as we started dealing tough with landlords, I think they've been reluctant to renew CNA leases. So we've been kicked out of a few malls, not because CNA is not the right brand, but because of the Edcon group. I think suppliers obviously are a little bit nervous. And, you know, I think under new ownership, money will flow into the business, new leadership will take over, and the business will flourish.
Grant Patterson, an optimistic view for CNA. But on the other side of that deal is Jan van Niekerk, who's a director at Astoria Investments. And I asked him if this was something he got on the cheap.
Look, it's slightly more than a buck, but I think it's quite clear that we don't take over, you know, trade creditors or any, you know, of the debt that sits in the Edcon structure. I mean, their debt is their prerogative, but we, you know, the transaction means that we have, you know, accepted all staff and we're taking the lease liabilities with us, and we get stock in the stores. None of the trade creditors or regular liabilities there.
Yeah, it's a pretty good deal.
I think as Grant said, we've been talking about this for a while, and I hope that you heard the sadness in his voice, because I know Grant liked the business a lot, as do we. I mean, it's 120 years old. It survived world wars. It survived depressions. It survived a couple of regimes in South Africa, and it's still a household brand. And we're quite excited about the fact that CNA will be a standalone stationery and book retailer in South Africa, and we think there's a fantastic spot for a business like that. So together with the management team we've recruited to join us in this transaction, we're quite excited about the business.
Yeah, and the CEO is going to be Benjamin Trisk, who was ex-Exclusive Books. So that's going to be really interesting. But I do like this idea of the standalone stationery business. Well, if you stand alone, you will be stationary. Yes, that is Jan van Niekerk. Sam Clark, the founder and chief executive at Skynamo, fabulous South African startup, talking about how his sales app. And these guys provide this app to companies who want to keep track of what their sales forces are doing in the field. It gives the sales forces in the field the opportunity to do all the boring admin and paperwork and all the stuff they really hate doing and driving into the office to do and sitting at their computers, when actually all they want to do is be playing golf and drinking wine and doing deals. Okay, that's a cliche, but yeah, I guess there's some salespeople like that. But Sam Clark, CEO of Skynamo, talking about this huge US investment which they got fairly recently.
We very early on tendered for a couple of contracts that we didn't get around this field sales space. And the reason we didn't get those contracts makes, you know, total sense. We were a startup in those days. We didn't have the track record for delivery, and they were enterprise deals. So what we did is we developed what is now Skynamo as a project to show, to demonstrate our capabilities for field sales. And we started, we did it for a friend that had studied MBA with me. He had a small field sales team, so we developed it really around their needs. Another friend said, you should show this to our MD. We've got a couple of salespeople in the field. We showed it to him. He said, great, we'll take four. So we're like, okay. And we just started. Then one of our partners was on a golf day and there was a sales rep standing on a wet hole. It's like, you know, you've got a tablet. What app are you using? And he goes, no, we don't have apps. So we asked him for his manager's name and went and showed him what we had. And he said, great. You know, I think they ended up taking, 16 on the first day and they were up to 84 at one stage.
When you build something like this, what is the vision for it? When you start out, you go, yeah, we could probably change a few people's lives. I mean, do you get surprised by the uptake? Do you get surprised by the fact that you know it's good, but getting to convince other people to actually pay you money for something that is good is always the tough job?
We are constantly flabbergasted. Surprise doesn't quite cut it. I was in the United States last week, and you read the market reports, and the market reports say that half of all the B2B transactions in the United States don't use digital means.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? It's a really nice story. If you want the whole interview, as I was talking to Sam Clark, the founder of SkyNMO, it and all of the other stories that we've done on The Money Show this week on our podcasts, which we publish each and every single day. Time for, it's Friday, it's 10 to 7. Brutal Biz Quiz time. It's like the best time of the week. Which company was founded in 1896? And it was selling newspapers in Joburg. And it used delivery boys in those days on foot and on bicycles. Oh, to sell newspapers. Shame. It got itself sold this week. What is the name of that company? 011-883-0702-021-446-0567 here on The Money Show to play the Brutal Biz Quiz.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, the bank that's unearthing limitless potential at Mining Indaba 2020. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP. The Money Show.
The Brutal Biz Quiz.
And it is brutal. Which company was founded in 1896 to sell newspapers itself on the block this week? 011-883-0702-021-446-0567. William, what is the name of that company?
CNA, Bruce.
CNA is absolutely correct. Astoria Investments buying the business from Edcon for not very much money. A 15-year-old boy called Erasmus Jacobs was walking through the veld one day and found a piece of carbon in 1867. What was it?
No, I can't get that.
Oh, William. But thank you for playing. 011-883-0702. Claudia, which bit of carbon did Erasmus Jacobs find in 1867 in the veld?
DNA.
Pardon?
CNA.
No, Erasmus Jacobs didn't find a piece of carbon called CNA in the felt, I'm afraid. No, that is incorrect. The questions change. You see, the way this game works is I ask a question, somebody gets the answer right, then I move on to the next question. It's really not that complicated. What did a 15-year-old Erasmus Jacobs find in the felt in 1867? That is my question to you this evening on the Brutal Biz Quiz this Friday night. Sikombuzi this evening, what is that piece of carbon?
It was a Cullinan diamond.
It wasn't the Cullinan diamond. It was a diamond, so you get that. You get the point. According to the Cape Diamond Museum, South Africa's first diamond find, certainly the first diamond find that led to a commercial application, that diamond later became the Eureka diamond. So well done to you. It was a diamond, Sikumbuso. But yes, and it was the one that sparked the diamond rush on Kimberley. Now, I don't know if I would have remembered this if I hadn't had the answer in front of me. So it's terribly difficult. So good luck with it. 011-883-0702. I would like to know the two official founders of Microsoft. One of them is a nerd called Bill Gates, who's got a mean tennis game in him. Who was the other guy? His yacht,
Paul Allen,
used to come to Cape Town from time to time. You're a bigger nerd as Paul Allen and Bill Gates combined, Sikombuzo. Absolutely. And Bill Gates is in town for this charity tennis match this evening. There are three trustees on the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. One is Bill Gates.
It's Roger Federer and...
Oh, but you were wrong, I'm afraid. It wasn't Roger Federer. Also, another part of the game is it's good to listen to the question before you answer it. So there are three trustees of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. One is Bill Gates, one is Melinda Gates, and the third is... whom? If there's time, we'll take your answer on 011-883-0702-021-446-0567.